This is David Harlow at Health Blog, and I have with me today John Glasser, the CIO at Partners Healthcare in Boston. Hello, John. Thank you for joining us.
Pleasure, David.
So Partners Healthcare, for those of you who are not familiar with it, is an organization that includes 10 hospitals, 7,000 physicians, 45,000 employees. Have I got that right, John, more or less?
Yes, you do.
And John has been the CIO at Partners for quite some time, and he has also been acting as an advisor to the ONC on implementation of the High Tech Act since last spring. We'll try to steer clear of government-related issues today and focus on issues at Partners. So, John, moving beyond the numbers, how would you describe Partners Healthcare and what it means to be CIO of Partners?
Well, Partners Healthcare has got a couple of attributes. One is it's large, and so the other number to put in there is about $7.9 billion in revenue, in addition to its hospital, an extensive array of outpatient clinics, physician practices, and non-acute facilities. It's a very large, very complex organization. It's also quite academic, given its two founders. So it has tremendous resources, tremendous talent, some world-class organizations, and using those assets, it can be a challenge at times to line everybody up and have the organization move in a concerted direction. I guess that's true of all large organizations, but we certainly feel that at Partners. And while that can be difficult at times, the fact that there is such talent and there is such a commitment to the mission of care, research, and education makes it worthwhile and enables us to accomplish from time to time some very remarkable things.
Would you say that things have gotten easier as the association has lasted longer or more complex as it's grown larger? You've been with the organization quite some time now, and I'm wondering how things have changed over the years.
Well, I have been for quite some time. I've been the CIO since 1995, and so that's a little over 15 years, but part of that CIO at the Brigham for another 7 years, so 22-plus years in the family as a whole. So I think very clear that as the organization has matured and has begun to understand how to work together, that it is more effective at working together, bringing together very disparate organizations, large AMCs, small community hospitals, for example, and bringing together people who may or may not have had a track record of working together. So it is better at moving as an integrated system than it has been in years past. On the other hand, the challenges it has to address have become more significant. So there are greater cost pressures today than there were 10 years ago. There are greater quality pressures than there were 10 years ago. The pace of medical innovation and medical advances are more significant. As our community of clinicians and others have become more experienced with the technology, they also become more demanding and more sophisticated. So the demands and the expectations are higher. And have been paralleled by a growing ability to work together as a collective.
So going back to a couple of things that you've said specifically, I'm wondering if you could tell us, how does the health information technology function within Partners help to enable the organization to deal with some of these issues, whether it's adherence to quality measures, whether it's dealing with payment issues, and how does your function, your part of the organization's function, integrate with the clinical function?
Well, there are a number of ways in which we try and at times succeed in helping Partners address these challenges. At times we take processes and make them more efficient and hence save money in addition to having those processes work faster, be less error prone, et cetera. By providing data that comes out of the EHR, the organization's in a much better position to look at variations in care practices and identify those practices that are more efficient than others, that are better quality than others. I actually have the data to assess quality and to then deal with that variation in whatever manner it chooses to do so. So the fact that you have clinical data and data that also brings along the cost component of that clinical data allows us to look at where we need to do some work, where we don't. So there is, for example, a monthly report put out on dozens and dozens of quality measures, and they're coded red, yellow, green, depending where we are relative to national benchmarks, and it allows us to focus on areas that do need some attention. In addition to that, you can use these systems like CPOE or the EHR to introduce logic at the time of care, so to make sure that an order is a safe order or that an overdue health maintenance activity has been noted and follow-up is occurring. So through the transaction systems, one has the ability to carry out a lot of the guidance and recommended care that comes out of the data activities. So there is a series of analysis capabilities and transaction capabilities that help address this complicated mixture of cost, quality, and safety. But also, in addition to that, is the ability to adapt. So, for example, it's fairly clear in the next several years, 3 to 5, for example, genetic testing will be an increasingly larger component of healthcare because of our greater understanding of your genetic makeup and how it guides treatment decisions or what disease you really have. And so the ability of systems to adapt and to capitalize on advances in medical care, to capitalize on advances in care models such as the medical home or accountable care organizations, but also capitalize on the gains that new technology can bring that we are trying to make sure that our infrastructure and applications are able to move as the collective environment moves.
Now, I understand a few years back you partners established together with Harvard Medical School Center for Genetics and Genomics. And is this what you're talking about? Is this informing some of the care management? Or is there genetic testing data that's included in patient profiles that can be used to guide clinical services?
Yeah, we formed several years ago what is now called the Partner Center for Personalized Genetic Medicine, and it has two major roles. One is to facilitate research into the genomic basis of disease or treatment variability. So, for example, if you're clinically depressed and given an SSRI, it works well a third of the time, medium well a third of the time, and not at all a third of the time, and so helping investigators determine whether there's a genetic underpinning to that. So we've learned a lot, and this will help accelerate research into how genes contribute to our diseases and our treatment success, for example. In addition to that, that is also not only because of the advances themselves, but the knowledge about how do you store genetic test results and what does genetic decision support look like? How do you present genetic test results to the clinician has begun to make its way into the clinical systems. Largely at this point focused on cancer, but we do have decision support that says before you order this chemotherapeutic agent, you should run this genetic test because that will tell you whether the agent will or will not be successful. We do have a piece of software called the Patient Genome Explorer, which sits right beside the results viewer for chemistry results. This allows you to look up genetic test results and understand their ramifications for the patient you're treating.
Is there an overlay now with the GINA legislation on top of HIPAA in terms of privacy requirements and protection requirements, encryption, others relating to genetic information that's on the system, or is HIPAA deal with that sufficiently?
Well, I think there is a clear genetic privacy ramifications for all this, and it gets complicated. We'll give you two examples. If a genetic test were to say that you or I were at great risk of a debilitating form of dementia, one would say, well, I ought to keep that private for lots of different reasons. On the other hand, a genetic test result that says you will be a slow metabolizer of sulfa drugs, you might say, geez, I'm less worried about loss of job or loss of insurance based on that, but I do want my doctor to know because I want to make sure they don't inadvertently overdose me on a particular drug. So genetic test results actually span the gamut, those which are highly sensitive, to those which I think most people regard as no more sensitive than a blood potassium reading. And given that, nonetheless, what we've decided to do is to treat any genetic test result as being in the same category of the most sensitive data. And so this is HIV data, this is mental health data. We treat that and provide both the policy procedure, the consenting processes, for example, but also the IT controls over that type of data that we would. I think perhaps society may evolve to the point where it categorizes genetic data into different forms or buckets of sensitivity, but until that's the case, we will treat it as the most sensitive.
So you're not looking to get patient consent to disclose certain types of genetic information, like,
yes,
for example, what you
would, just as you would on any sort of highly sensitive set of data.
One area of interest at Partners is the electronic health record and the use of electronic health records over time which I understand is a homegrown system. Is that right?
Yes, the bulk of our, we have approximately 4,200 physician users of our outpatient EHR. 85% use the homegrown version, and 15% use a mix of GE and a couple of other systems that have been in place for quite a while.
And what would you recommend, having had the experience with both? Do you have, what words of wisdom would you have to other providers who are looking at implementing EHR systems in this era of high-tech incentives?
Well, I think these systems, whether you build them yourselves or you buy them from the market, and most people buy them from the market and most people should buy them from the market, these are a challenge to get in place. They are very invasive to the workflow, and so a physician or a nurse practitioner or any other healthcare professional now is documenting on them, writing orders on them, reviewing results. It's very invasive. It's not something that's kind of off to the side. And as a result, there is a great deal of demand for systems that have a lot of strong feature function, but also are very usable and quick. It requires that workflow be understood, changed if necessary. And it includes, where do you place printers and things like that. It requires a good deal of training and some strong support. And I think practices who undergo this should be prepared for several months, and it seems to vary, at least in our practice, sometimes as long as 6 months, sometimes as short as 2 months, where there is a form of disruption and people just getting their feet wet and getting oriented to all this. So there are a lot of demands on the system. There's a lot of demands on the implementation process and the workflow change process. There are a lot of demands on support. And obviously, there's a lot of demands on the practice who goes through this. Nonetheless, once you get through that, we have never had any clinician of any form say, I wish I could go back to paper. They clearly see that the care is better, that there have been some efficiencies gained, there have been some challenges. Sometimes it takes longer to do certain tasks. But nonetheless, it is a journey that is both from a care perspective and a sort of cost of care overall, but also the ability of the providers to say, I'm practicing good medicine, to be able to state that. So I think it's a hard journey, but it is a worthwhile journey that the federal government incentives recognize the importance of us collectively moving in that direction.
Part of the issue is the interoperability and the opportunity for free exchange of data from one provider's electronic health record to another to be able to follow a patient across care settings. Given the size and the scope of the partners network, I'm wondering how important the development of RIOs and health information exchanges are to partners. Are patients who are seen within the partners network receiving all of their care within the network?
No, and I think, other than certain closed systems are more closed than others. The VA, Kaiser are more closed than others. Almost 50% of our referrals, remembering we're academic at our core, come from physicians outside of partners. And so we have extensive movement of people in and out of partners. Some stay within the partners community, but a lot don't. So I think this notion of exchanging data is critical. I mean, and it runs a sort of a gamut. It runs the gamut of giving the referring physician access to the core institutional systems, to the gamut of the movement of a structured transaction. Maybe it's an operative note. Maybe it's a set of chemistry results from one system to the other. At times, we have clinical affiliations which are very strong, and you wind up with shared scheduling systems, shared email systems, and much more extensive integration and interoperability. So I think the basic rubric of putting out standards and encouraging the exchange is a very important set of activities. It creates parallel issues. It creates issues of making sure that the privacy and the security steps necessary are put in place, because we now have different privacy and security challenges when this occurs. It also places a challenge on the providers who now may be going into their EHR and seeing lots and lots of data from lots and lots of other providers and saying, holy smokes, I have a brief period of time with this patient, but I have 200 notes, and 180 of them are not mine. How do I wade through these or determine which ones are the most important? So a knowledge management function and a decision support function and a set of guidance using all of the above might help the physician zero in on the most clinically relevant becomes a challenge. So there's great gain to be had. It does bring some parallel challenges that we still need to address.
Have you seen some movement in the direction of being able to wade through those kinds of notes, the kind of volume of notes that might be from outside providers, any sort of knowledge management system that you're using or that is on the market today?
Well, I don't know about on the market. We are, as an IS group, unusually academic, and about 15% of our staff are funded by federal grants or through industry partnerships to explore leading-edge topics on healthcare IT, and they run the gamut from sort of what is known as telemedicine to genetic medicine to knowledge management, things like that. But we do have some people who are looking at different techniques to be applied to putting a layer of logic on top of complex and idiosyncratic data coming in and, you know, teasing out that set of data. So, for example, if you know that there are, let's say, 200 notes and that the patient is being seen by a cardiologist, is have the system be able to identify that subset of notes that appear to have a bearing on the consultation in question, and being able to help categorize those notes to the doctor so that he or she can say, geez, of the 200, there are 5 that are related to prior cardiac events, there are 4 that are related to what appear to be cardiac procedures. So anyway, to help sort of filter through and surface that subset of note, which or other data, which appears to be the most salient. So we're trying a bunch of different techniques to figure out how to do that.
On a related note, some of the tools and products that have been on display at HIMSS this week or announced at HIMSS this week in down in Atlanta, I'm wondering whether there are categories or particular types of tools coming out of that conference and from the exhibitors there that are of particular interest to you, something that catches your interest?
Well, I was at HIMSS but for only a day, and I was only briefly made out on the exhibit floor, so I didn't get a good chance to see what is going on. I think, you know, in general, obviously the major topic is the federal stimulus funds and how to address those. So I think, you know, tools that invariably help providers meet those meaningfully used requirements or the standards, and particularly help the smaller physician practices, smaller hospital, which have very low adoption rates and have in general, not entirely, but in general not been as well served by the market as the larger organizations, is that technologies that are directed there are, you know, of great interest. But anyway, I didn't have a chance to personally see a whole lot of the exhibit floor.
Fair enough. I'm wondering what you would identify now as sort of areas of opportunity as well as areas of challenge in adopting not only EHRs but other health information technology tools across the healthcare spectrum. Maybe speaking from your experience within partners, but also, as you mentioned, looking at some of the smaller providers, which is where I think collectively we're hoping there'll be greater adoption.
Yeah. Well, I think broadly and across the country, we still have the challenge of getting higher adoption rates and now meaningful use of those technologies. So I'm sure those of you folks listening to this know the rates as well as I, but they're low. And so that challenge, which has been with us for a while, is still with us, and perhaps we'll have a series of factors that will cause us to pursue it more aggressively. And I think in particular, as mentioned before, it is the smaller provider organizations which need the most innovative approaches to the delivery of these systems and helping those patients, and remembering that 2/3 of all outpatient visits occur in physician practices of 3 or fewer docs. So it's where the bulk of care occurs in the U.S. So there is that challenge is going to be with us for quite some time. I mean, several years that will be with us. And all that implies, you know, the difficult work of implementation and some of the comments mentioned earlier. In addition to that, it's also clear that there are some opportunities emerging, or at least will be different, as a result of broad adoption of interoperable electronic health records. One is the management of interoperability at scale, protection of privacy, the assurance of standards, helping docs deal with large volumes of information. And so there will be a series of things we'll have to do and understand. This is when you have interoperability at scale, what gain really occurs, but also what challenges are present or revealed that we still need to develop tactics and tools to deal with. The other is that there is clearly going to happen, beginning to happen now, large accumulations of data about patients, which can be used for comparative effectiveness research, clinical research, post-market surveillance of medications and devices, public health surveillance, et cetera. And I think we have a lot to learn about how to manage that data, not only the protection of privacy, but also how to distill patterns out of data which is often conflicting, noisy, or incomplete. I think the third area we still have a lot of ground to cover is how best to engage patients or use the technology to engage patients, personal health records, personally controlled health records, a lot of sort of targeted applications where you can measure your blood sugar or your blood oxygen saturation or whatever it might happen to be, people with chronic diseases, so we have a lot to learn there. So a lot of promise there, but still relatively small levels of adoption and very limited understanding of how much of a contribution this will make to the management, let's say, of a chronic disease or the gradual improvement of health. So there are, a couple big areas. I guess one more other big area is if we have large bases of knowledge or decision support across wide ranges of systems, is managing this knowledge base. You know, a knowledge base of rules or order sets or templates that is now quite sizable, which changes from time to time. And I think one of the factors of our growing knowledge of the relationship between the genome and our health is whatever volume of decision support rules you think there are now, it's going to go off the charts as that becomes increasingly incorporated into medical practice. So how best to manage that knowledge base and to ensure that it's effective remains a daunting challenge. So as we address the sort of core one, getting these systems in place and used well, sort of broadly looking at a series of challenges coming up that will result from the broad use of interoperable electronic health records.
Do you see a direct correlation between the advance in these systems and a return on investment, if you will, or is this just part of the infrastructure that has to be in place in the future? Is this just like you need to have a telephone, you need to have these
systems? Well, I think it's a combination of things. One is it's a technology at the end of the day is a tool and per se guarantees no ROI, and you see that in some of the studies they've done, or sometimes the great gains in patient safety have occurred, sometimes they haven't, and sometimes the organization runs more efficiently and sometimes it doesn't. So we have very variable outcomes, and partly because it's not the tool that delivers the outcome, it's the way that it is implemented and how effective it is. So we will continue to see that because, again, it is at the mercy of the skill of change management and leadership and a wide variety of other things. So given that, we also recognize that the nature of the return is really diverse. At times it is very intangible. I mean, what's the ROI of email? Beats me. But nonetheless, few of us could get through a day without it. At other times, the ROI is quite tangible because you can say, golly, we're cutting real costs here or making real revenue. At times, the outcome is tangible, but may not always be expressible in terms of dollars. You can, but that's not the point. So if you deliver safer care, you can certainly measure the dollars there, but those aren't really the measures that people are focused on, or improve service. So I think we will see a return, broadly speaking, realizing how tangible or intangible, how dollarizable or not dollarizable it is to the sort of settings in which to deliver. I think at the end of the day, it is one of those things which you say, listen, this is a given. It is hard to imagine that we would sit here today and say, if 10 years from now we ran our healthcare system on paper, that would be okay or a good thing. I think there are very few people who would stand up and try to carry that argument forward. It at a face validity level and at an empirical level, it just doesn't make sense. So I think the sort of basic idea that if we really want to make extraordinary gains in the care in this country, you have to have this foundation in place. The foundation doesn't guarantee it, but it's hard to imagine that you would accomplish it without it.
Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure. I hope this is interesting and informative, and I appreciate the time.
It certainly is. I've been speaking with John Glasser, Chief Information Officer at Partners Healthcare in Boston, on implementation of health information technology and the improvement of healthcare. Thanks again, John.
All right. Thank you, David.